Thanks, worship team, as they remind us of some important things that we sing about as we praise Him, and important truths that hopefully aren't just songs that we sing, but it's how we live. And like I said, that one song is just, that's the exact thing that God was looking for in this series we've been doing. The exact thing that, you know, I'm praying that I do in my own life, I'm praying that we as a church do as well, and that's run after God's heart and His ways because of the profound impact that can have in all areas and aspects of life. So as we kind of start bringing this series to a conclusion, we're going to cover four chapters today. Don't worry, I'll be able to do it in the time frame I'm allotted. I know a lot of you just got concerned about that, but we're going to breeze through that. This last story is really about Samson. Probably most people have heard that name or know a little bit something about that story. So chapter 12, verse 8 through 15 lists three other judges. We've been talking about judges or deliverers. We talked about what that means. But there's like, you know, three, four verses for those guys. So we're not going to spend any time on them. We're just going to kind of say, okay, they were there, and we're going to move to Samson. Samson is the conclusion of the section we had been talking about that was the cycle. I don't have the picture up here. I should have put it up there, but I will next week. The cycle of what was happening in the book of Judges, where they walked away from God. God sent these particular people to turn them back to Him. They cry out to God. God sends a judge or deliverer. That deliverer frees them from that oppression. They experience peace. And then we're back at the cycle and it just starts all over again. Well, this is the conclusion of that cycle. Chapter 13, basically, through 16. And it's all about one person. It's all about Samson. So I'm wondering why, as we looked through the beginning in chapter 3, we started in this cycle, and we kind of focused on there were multiple people, but all the tribes were kind of included in what was going on. So there was, you know, whatever battle they were going out to, there was a whole tribe doing it. So I guess my question is, why does the author end just focusing on this one guy's life? Seriously, why? I'm asking you. Tell me. I always come to, like, that's, I think about that when you're reading the Bible. Why did the author write it in the way that he did? Why is it where it is? Nothing's by accident. It is designed in a particular way. And so why design it in such a way that we are just focused on this guy and his life? And you know, if we've been talking about this, Judges is written as a tragedy. So we just watch this guy's life unravel and implode. And that's kind of where the author ends it. Now, we've not been ending it there. We've been ending it with why our stories need a hero. Samson is not that. But what does it look like to have that in a culture and society? Like I said before, maybe you grew up in the church, and if you did, you heard stories about Samson, and it was always about how strong he was, not about what a deplorable kind of guy he was. And if you read, we're not going to read all of it because there's kids in the room, but if you read all of the story of Samson, it's not pretty. And as I will say later, it's if I was doing a Netflix series on Samson, it'd be for mature audiences only. That's what the rating would be for it. So why focus on this guy and watch his life implode? So I'm going to give you the answer to that now, and you can try and remember it till the end. Because a single life matters. And especially if you're leading something, it matters. And the way you live that life matters. And we call that character. We would say character counts. If you have a boss, character matters. If you got somebody leading a company, character matters. If you're on a sports team, character matters. If you're leading an organization of some kind in the community, character matters. If you're in government, character matters. We believe it matters. It has a part to play in that person's life. And I remember reading an article about this and the importance of character and character formation and all that kind of stuff. And the article was written close to when everything was happening with the Clinton impeachment trial and that kind of stuff. And one of the things that was brought out in that trial, or one of the things that was said, was that character isn't quite as important as competency. So it's more important that your boss is competent than has character. And so the language and terminology and kind of what we held up as the ideal changed. It's not so much the character of the person, but are they competent? Well, Samson was a very competent killer, basically. But we see that not actually helping him in the end, or helping Judges, the Israel in the end. And thinking about this, and kind of a particular phrase that I'm going to read for you in just a minute, is, as I've shared with you, our family has decided to do homeschooling. And so this was a big piece of why I was moving in that direction, and Jess and I decided to do it, was for me, the most important thing for us to do, while I want my kids to be educated, is human formation. It matters to me the kind of person my child is, whether they're a teacher, a janitor, a CEO, or the president of the United States, a stay-at-home mom. What matters most to me is who they are. And education is a big piece of that. At one time, education was about human formation. We put a great deal of importance on virtue and morals. And the way we discovered those was through literature, was through stories that were being told, stories that were written, plays and poems and things like that. History and all those classes, what we would traditionally call a liberal arts type degree, was really about human formation. Because if you're a CEO or a stay-at-home mom and everywhere in between, what matters is the kind of people we are. And that the author of Judges is making that very evident and clear. And again, the case he's making is we need a good king to lead this nation. And that good king ultimately is David, except we all know the story about David, and he just doesn't quite come up to par either, which begs the question, is there anybody that can be that king? Of course, we know the answer to that, the King of Kings. Jesus comes and fulfills exactly what the author of Judges is looking for in that person. And Jesus' whole Sermon on the Mount, Jesus' whole teaching is really about character, human formation, who we are as people. And so we get an in-depth look at what it looks like when that's not happening. Samson is that in-depth look. So chapter 12, verse 8 through 15 tells us that there's some other judges. We don't get a lot of information about them. We're starting, as I said, in the southern part of Israel, moving north. As we move north, it gets worse and worse and worse. Actually, Samson is from this tribe down here, so we're still in the southern part of Israel, but something bad happens between this tribe and this tribe, which is called Judah, in this story, and basically this whole tribe moves north. So there's some common refrains that we hear in the book of Judges that we're going to stop hearing. Remember, I just outlined the cycle for you. This is what was going through from chapter 3 all the way to chapter 13. But some small changes are taking place that are telling us something. It's revealing to us something about the storyline. about what's happening in the story. Now, what I have suggested, this has kind of been our running definition of what a hero is, and we're going to talk about that as we conclude as well. But this is exactly what Israel was looking for. This is exactly what God was trying to raise up within these deliverers or judges, as we call them in our English translation. And this is exactly the kind of person Samson was not. He is not a role model for your children. And I can remember those stories. And maybe the Sunday school teachers were saving a lot of conversations with parents after Sunday school about some of the stuff Samson did. But sometimes I think we lose sight of the purpose of the Samson story is so that we don't end up that way. The author in tragic literature is trying to teach you something that you walk away and say, wow, I've got a lot to think about in my own life. And Samson's story is that. One of the things that we heard over and over and over again was this refrain. Now, this is chapter 8, verse 28. This is the story about Gideon. We talked about him a couple of weeks ago. And Midian was the group of people that God was using to try and turn Israel back to himself, back to his ways. And it says, thus Midian was subdued. Gideon was the judge that was raised up to do this before the Israelites and did not raise its head again. During Gideon's lifetime, the land had peace for 40 years. You don't hear that anymore. Verse 28 of chapter 8 is the last time you hear the land had peace for 40 years. Why? Something had changed. And it's this devolving of culture, the degeneration of the culture to the point that if you look at chapter 12, verse 8 through 15, that's not said of these judges that were raised up to deliver Israel. That's not said. That 40 years is a generation. That's kind of the language they're using. And what that says to me is tomorrow isn't going to be the same as yesterday just because it's always been this way. Israel's culture had started changing. They had gotten used to it. In chapter 3, we heard that. And the land had peace for 40 years. And the land had peace. Now we're not hearing it anymore. Things are changing more rapidly. This is what happens when you have leaders like Samson. It just keeps spiraling out of control, gets worse and worse and worse. And so now the author of Judges doesn't even write that anymore. And the land had peace for 40 years. It's not happening anymore. But there is something that continues to happen. And it's a common refrain that you've heard since we've begun. This sentence has been used from the very beginning of the sermon series. You could substitute Philistines for any other people group, and the same sentence would apply. Now, you may see that that is an incomplete sentence. There's just some random words on there. This is a fill-in-the-blank time period. This is your opportunity to impress me. Thank you, Lisa. She gets you off the hook. And that went a lot faster than I was anticipating. We might get out of here early today. That went fast. This is what we hear over and over again. We're not hearing there was peace in the land anymore. But if you turn to chapter 13, verse 1, that's what you read. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, so the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. The cycle is starting over, but even the cycle is not the same. If you read all of chapter 13, we're not going to take the time to read all of chapter 13, but nobody is crying out to God for a deliverer. God just gives them one. And this one that he's going to provide isn't even born yet. That's what chapter 13 is about. It's about Samson, his life, and God's, the angel of the Lord, appearing to Samson's mom and dad, specifically his mom, to tell them what he's about to do in Israel. And so the cycle itself has kind of devolved, that there's nobody even crying out to God to be delivered anymore. This is just normal life. This is just how things are. And it keeps getting worse and worse. Remember, chapter 12 ended with Japhethah and Ephraim. Those are two different tribes of Israel killing each other. There was a civil war. And so now God is just responding because God is the hero of the book of Judges. God is responding because he is faithful to them and he's going to provide a judge. But unfortunately, that judge begins to do what's right in his own eyes. So chapter 13 begins with Samson's story. A certain man of Zorah named Manoah from the clan of the Danites, that's the tribe he was a part of, had a wife who was childless, unable to give birth. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, "You are barren and childless, but you are going to become pregnant and give birth to a son." So the angel appears to Samson's mom. That's where we're at. That's the scene. And now this is what the angel Lord is saying. "Now see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink, that you do not eat anything unclean. You will become pregnant and have a son whose head is never to be touched by a razor, because the boy is to be a Nazarite, dedicated to God from the womb. He will take the lead in delivering Israel from the hands of the Philistines." God's going to provide the deliverer that they need. Now the angel of the Lord appears to Samson's mom and says all this. Samson's mom goes and tells Samson's eventual dad, her husband. He doesn't believe her. And so they pray again and ask God to show up again. And the angel of the Lord does, except the angel of the Lord shows up to his mom again, not to the father. Again, this is kind of an image of the unbelief in the land. They didn't even realize who they were talking to in the very end of chapter 13, where the angel of the Lord does some kind of crazy stuff. And it's like, oh my word, we just saw God. And now they're terrified they're going to die because they saw God. And Samson's mom says, if he wanted to kill us, he would have done it. He's doing something else. And that something else is giving them a deliverer. Now, what I read for you is an important piece in this story because it's talking about the birth of Samson, which hasn't happened yet, but it's talking about a vow, the Nazarite vow. And this is important because it comes into play in Samson's life. And the vow was basically these three things. This is something an Israelite could do. Oftentimes, it had a beginning and an end point. You took this vow here, and then you ended the vow here. In Samson's case, it was his life. God was dedicating unto himself a deliverer whose name would be Samson. Samson itself is a pagan name. They didn't even give the boy a name that reflected what God had said to them. So faith in Israel was pretty much non-existent. And yet God in his faithfulness to them gives them an opportunity to be delivered. And so this was the vow. You were not supposed to have anything from the vine. You weren't really supposed to eat grapes itself, but certainly not wine or any other fermented drink. You weren't supposed to cut your hair. There was no razor that's supposed to touch the head of this Nazarite vow. And you could not touch anything that was unclean, a dead body. This was something in Israel, if you read Leviticus and Numbers, they were talking about being ritually impure. God's presence was there. His holiness, his purity was there dwelling. And so being ritually impure was not a sin, but it was just an image that they were supposed to get in their heads of who this God is that they worship and his purity. And so touching dead things made you unclean, and then there was something you did to become pure again. And so to make sure that this person could enter God's presence, without that, they were not supposed to touch anything unclean or come in contact with a dead body or anything like that, whether it be a human or animal, whatever. So those three things are important as you read about Samson's life. And it says this, "So Manoah asked him," now this is the backstory. So if we were doing a Netflix series, you know, we'd have this story and then we'd shoot to the backstory of Samson and his life. And I'd create an episode all about this one verse in chapter 13, verse 12, because this one verse sticks out to me as one of the most important. I've read Samson's story multiple times, but this verse stuck out to me. Like, I can't believe I missed this. Samson's dad asks the angel of the Lord, before Samson is born, when your words are fulfilled, when my wife is barren and childless, and you're telling us we're going to have a son, when your words are fulfilled, when that happens, what is to be the rule that governs the boy's life and work? What is to be the rule that governs this boy's life and work? That is one of the most important questions we can ask ourselves in life, I think. What is it that governs your life and your work? What is it? What is the number one rule that governs the way you raise your family, the way that you are out in the business world, in the community organizations, on the sports teams? What is it that governs your life and work? Because that one thing will have profound influence on everything else. And what we see in Samson's life is not God and his ways. As followers of Jesus, we talk about Jesus and his ways. It's not what governed Samson's life. And yet that's the number one question before Samson is born that his dad asks. If we don't have an answer to that question, it's going to be really hard to raise our children. It's going to be really hard to follow God and his ways in the world around us. What is to be the rule that governs your life and your work, the way you raise your family? What informs all of that? See, this was a big piece of education. This is what's most important to me. This is why we decided to do homeschooling. This is just Jess and I and our talking to God about it and our decision. I want to have as much influence over this as I possibly can, because what matters to me is what rules and governs my two daughters' lives. It matters to me what rules and governs the lives of the people here at this church. That's what matters to me. And so I am striving to make sure that whether my daughters go into the workforce, whether they go to college, whether they don't go to college and they just become stay-at-home moms, or whatever they decide to do, what is most important to me is the rule, is that thing that governs their life and work. And it's that rule that we've walked away from. It's that rule that we as parents have not taken seriously enough. It's that rule that we're not demanding our leaders live by. And it's the breaking of that, or it's not having that as a piece of our lives, that got us into the state that we're in within our culture. And what we actually see in Samson's life is, however they answered that question back in chapter 13, it didn't take root in Samson. Chapter 14 begins Samson's life. We hear this story about his life. This would be a new episode. Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. The Philistines are the very people oppressing Israel. And so he goes to the oppressors and to their community and tries to find a wife. And I don't have it up here for you, but Samson says, when he returned, he said to his father and mother, "I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife." This time period was called arranged marriages. They would just arrange marriages. And what I don't have up here for you is actually in verse 3. His father and mother replied to Samson, "Isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife, the very people that are oppressing us?" But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me. She's the right one for me." That can also be translated, "Get her for me. She is right in my eyes." Now, you'll hear that phrase. We heard that phrase all the way at the beginning, and the author is going to conclude with that same phrase. Israel did what was ever right in their own eyes. And Samson is an example of what that looks like. The rule that governed Samson's life and work was not God and his ways. It was whatever is right in Samson's eyes. Whatever I deem to be right, that's what I'm going to do. And through Samson's life, he continues to live out that philosophy. And so if you read on through chapter 14, this would be, you know, the mature audience's only portion. Chapter really starts in 14, goes through 15, and all of through 16. We see Samson does indeed marry a Philistine woman, and he is, in those days, wedding festival or feast lasted a week long, and he's having a good time. Remember, one of the vows was not to have fermented drink or wine, and Samson threw that out the window, and he's talking to the Philistines. These are the enemy, and he's talking to them. He makes a bet, and Samson takes a wife, but he loses his wife. He loses the bet. His wife betrays him, and so Samson starts to kill people. He's like, okay, I got to make good on my bet, so he starts killing people. And then after he's done that, he loses his wife, and so he kills people again. And after that, something else happens, and he gets really angry, and he burns all their crops, the Philistine crops, and then his wife and his father-in-law are murdered. And so what does Samson do? He kills people again. I mean, that's what the story is. And it's not Samson delivering Israel. It's Samson just taking revenge on people and retaliating. And so ultimately, something major happens, and Samson kills a whole lot of people, and then he goes and he hides in a cave in the southern part of Israel in Judah. And that's another tribe. These would be countrymen of Samson. And they go to that cave and they say, look, man, these guys are after us and we're going to give you to them. And so Samson comes out. They bind his hands and his legs and all that kind of stuff. And they turn his own countrymen, turn him over to the Philistines. And then I don't think I have it there, but he kills people again. So that's kind of like the routine of Samson. That would be, I've never watched it, but I imagine Game of Thrones would be something like this. I've not seen the show, but, you know, this is basically Game of Thrones in ancient Near Eastern culture. This is Samson's life. All we're watching is, what does it look like when the deliverer of Israel, and the one thing that should govern his life and his work, is God and his ways, and what governs Samson's life is what's right in Samson's eyes. This is what it looks like when people do what's right in their own eyes. So it just keeps getting worse and worse, and you get to chapter 16. This is the abbreviated version of the Netflix series I'm writing. And chapter 16, verse 1 says, one day Samson went to Gaza. This would be a Philistine-owned city. There were a whole lot of Philistines there, where he saw a prostitute. He went in to spend the night with her, period. If your story starts with that sentence, I don't know that anything good is going to be coming after that. I mean, that's a bad way to start a sentence. That's how chapter 16 starts. And again, Samson breaking vows, marriage covenant vows, Israelite vows of sexual immorality, all that kind of stuff. Samson's doing what's right in his own eyes. Whatever is pleasing to Samson, that's what Samson does. And why this is tragic literature is because we get to watch what happens to Samson's life as he basically implodes. And it's a sad thing to watch. Some of you have watched that very same thing. It's not reserved to Samson's day. There's a lot of people who do what they think is right in their own eyes, and unfortunately, we have to watch that life implode on itself. That's what's happening to Samson. Because he didn't have a good answer to what ruled and governed his life and his work. That's an important answer. That's an important question to ask ourselves. That's an important thing to think about if we're in the midst of raising a family, if we've got grandkids. If you are somebody who has the influence over somebody else, that is important question to ask yourself. Are you a coach? Are you a teacher? Are you in settings where you have that ability? That answer to that question is pretty important, because as we see in Samson's life, Israel is not freed. They're not delivered. Samson spent most of his time in what God was doing in his life, what God invited him to participate in and bringing redemption to Israel, freedom, that means freeing from slavery. Samson used all of that for himself. Samson spent his life focused on what Samson thought was right and good and what he wanted to do. In chapter 16, he finally breaks the last piece of this Nazirite vow. He was to be dedicated before he was born, dedicated to the Lord. The last of those vows, you've probably heard this story, is Samson's hair gets cut. We're introduced to another woman, Delilah, who is not part of Israel. Again, Samson's got a thing for the foreign ladies, apparently. And he's with this lady named Delilah. And no, they're not married. And so you can imagine what life was like for Samson. And she is bought by people of her own tribe. We're going to offer you money, a great deal of money, to betray Samson. So she tries to do that. There's multiple stories of that happening. Samson just kind of plays into it, but he knows what's going on. And she tries to betray him. He ends up killing people. She tries to betray him. He ends up killing people. Ultimately, he tells her what he thinks is how he is strengthened. They cut his hair. Samson is captured. They gouge out his eyes. He's blind. And he is doing, in prison, doing the job of what they had slaves do. And ultimately, Samson's story ends in chapter 16 with one final act of revenge in which a lot of people die. That was Samson's life. And I go back to the question that his dad asked the angel of the Lord. What is to be the rule that governs the boy's life and work? Now, I don't know what happened in the raising of Samson, but I do know in Israel there wasn't a whole lot of faith. The culture itself had devolved so quickly that they didn't even realize there were certain things you could do. There's a lot of ritual impurity stuff that were happening in Samson's life, and he could have cleansed himself of that by just doing some of the Levitical laws. Well, they didn't even think about the first five books of the Bible we call the Torah. And so what happened in that meantime? The author of the book of Judges is giving us this window into this world, this tragic window into this man's life of what it looks like when you have somebody leading that has no character, that they have not answered this question. Well, I guess Samson answered the question. What ruled Samson's life and work was him. And what was right in his own eyes. That's a dangerous place to be. There's a lot of people walking around like that that think they're in control. And they walk through my office and I'm watching a life imploding on itself. I'm sad to say it happens way too often. Because they answer this question incorrectly. The end. Go home. No. See, we don't end that way. That's depressing. We don't want to end that way. The author is ending that way for a purpose. He is driving home the fact of the importance of the character, of what rules and governs this person's life and work. And if nothing else, you ought to be asking yourself that same question. And if you're raising a family, that is extremely important. If you have any influence over anybody, you have an opportunity to influence them and help them see what should govern and rule their life. I want to give you this quote. See if you can tell me. I'm making you think this morning. See if you can tell me who said this. I'm going to read it for you. Strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many other lives. When he isn't around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he? Who said that? You think you know, Julie. You have a face like you know. Clarence, Carol, is that what you were going to say? Clarence, anybody see the movie It's a Wonderful Life? If you haven't seen that movie, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. It's like one of the greatest movies of all time. So I'm ending this sermon with the typical American happy ending at the end of the rainbow story. Because I think what this story communicates and why I love this story so much. I watch this every year. I've tried to force my children to watch it. They don't like it. I watch it in the black and white. They're like, that's not even in color. Yeah. But it is a story that captures exactly what I am talking about at the other end of the spectrum. And George Bailey wasn't even like a fiery evangelical Christian guy zealous for Jesus. You see the scene that he's in, sitting at the bar, and he just lost all of that money, and he's having a drink, and he's like, God, I don't do this very much, but I need some help. And the way that God shows him what kind of help he needs is to figure out what rules and governs his life. He had an idea of what life was supposed to be like. But what we see is a beautiful picture in George Bailey of sacrifice. And you know what that sacrifice got George Bailey? The end of the movie is the answer to that. It's a beautiful picture of what that looks like when you choose to influence other people's lives. And again, what I like about this story is he's just a regular guy. He's like any of us. And that story shows how your life, choosing to live that life well, choosing to live what I would call a hero, influences and impacts so many other people. And what you end up with when you don't realize that is Pottersville. If you've watched that movie, it was a dreadful place. Or that's how Frank Capra was depicting the scene. George Bailey didn't realize how much influence he had over the small town that he lived in. And when he wasn't there to have that kind of influence, it devolved into Pottersville. Not as bad as Samson's Day, but he realized how wonderful of a place he lived and how great his life really was. Because life was not all about George Bailey's dreams and desires. Life was about other people. And he didn't realize it, that his whole life, he was doing this unbeknownst to him until he was exposed to that by Clarence and this opportunity. What rules and governs our life has a profound impact on your kids, on your grandkids, on those kids in that classroom, on those kids on that sports field, on the coworkers that you work with, on the organization you're a part of. When we devote ourselves to Jesus and his ways, he has a way of using us so powerfully that had we not been in that situation, had George Bailey not been the George Bailey he was, we'd see a very different town. Well, that's true of you too, and me. Heroes come from everywhere. And I could substitute George Bailey's name with some of your names, because you live that way now. And some of those people have been a part of my life that had they not been a part of my life, I don't know where I would be. Because they had such a profound impact on me that it moved me to answer the question, what governs and rules my life and my work? And you know some of those people, and you are some of those people. And if we're going to see something different out there, in the culture around us. It's going to be because we live this way amongst them. There are lots of George Baileys out there, and you are some of them. And the more that we can answer that question and help other people answer that question of what rules and governs their life and point them to Jesus, the greater impact and influence and change we're going to bring about. I can't tell you how many times I try and do that as I watch a life implode on itself. From teenagers to adults. You're that for somebody. You know those people. Some of them are in your family. Some of them you're really good friends with. Some of them are your coworkers and you know they're just going through a tough time. Be that person in their life. Be that person that creates the conditions by which people choose to live a life well. Not doing what's right in their own eyes, but figuring out what is the right way to live. And if you're raising children, and if you get to have your grandkids a lot, and if you're a coach of some kind, it is so important that we do this for the next generation. Because the place that I want to live is like Bedford Falls, not Pottersville. And so I want to do my best to make sure my kids can live there too. And that happens because we take living out God and his ways, trusting and putting our faith and hope in Jesus out there. It doesn't stay in here. And as we do that, we'll see some pretty amazing things happen. To live our lives faithfully for Jesus. He has a way of making the impossible possible and changing entire communities, entire cultures and civilizations. Let's pray. God, thank you for these stories that have ways of impacting our lives. They have ways of teaching us, Lord, and reminding us, God, that our life, each of us, people sitting in this room, people watching at home, we have the opportunity to influence others. God, I pray that we would be able to answer the question of what rules and governs our life and work. And Lord, that we would help others answer that same question as well. And certainly, as we've seen in Samson's story, it's not doing what's right in our own eyes. Clearly, it's following Jesus and his ways. God, I pray that you would help each of us to be heroes. Help us to be a hero in our family, at our place of work, that sports team we're a part of, that organization we volunteer for, with our friends. God, wherever we are. And as we do that, Lord, I believe we will have a profound impact on the culture around us. God, help us to trust that Jesus has a way of making the impossible possible. We pray all this in his name. Amen.